nothing to rearrange. Sometimes you just get a feeling like you need some kind of change. No matter what the odds are this time, nothing's gonna stand in my way. It's playing in my heart like a long lost friend. Give every dark fade a light at the end. Standing tall on the way.
Hello.
Hello.
You just called?
Well, we're trying.
Yeah, I told you I wasn't available this week, right?
Oh,
all right then. Well, oh. we didn't call you then.
Then we didn't call you.
We're not talking totally to you right you. Now.
Bye, Chris.
Yeah, Scott Kowalczyk.
If you want to say hi now, I mean, we are recording you right now. You could.
Guess he's at work.
Hi, Scott. Oh, okay.
Hey, Chris, just say you're not available and hang up like with a lot of anger.
Okay. Yeah, sorry, I'm not on the podcast this week. I guess I am, though. All right, bye-bye.
Okay, that is the entrance to the podcast. That was really
good. Well, we're keeping that. There's no way we're getting rid of that. That's podcast gold.
Yeah. That's awesome. Really good. That should be Chris's entrance for the rest of the year. I'm not available.
There's the episode title right there.
Yeah.
All right. I am not available.
I am not on the podcast tonight.
All right. Well, we've already started because we're keeping that. So
all right.
No way that's going. It's gold.
Well, then, hey, oh, and here we go. It is We Talk Comics episode 120. 120. I am your host, Keith, who is on the podcast this week. And I am joined by Mo.
Yeah, there was a collective when you said that Mo's on the podcast this week. Did you hear it out there? Could you hear it audibly? There was a collective groan that went out across the universe.
Is that in TV land?
What's that?
Is that in TV land? Out in TV land that there was
a groan? There in TV land. For those people watching our video podcast, we call it The Hangout. And it's good. It's us dressed as girls talking comics.
Women, I prefer dressed as
women. Yes.
And we're also joined by Brett.
Well, hello. It's good to be back. It feels like forever.
Well, the thing is, Brett, is you won't come on to talk to me or Keith. But if there's somebody you actually like who you want to suck ass and get close to on, like our next guest, then you'll be on.
Suck ass. Well, that's...
Well, that may not be what you want to do. Well, who knows, actually. The offer may not be turned down.
He's a lovely fellow.
And we are expecting to be joined in progress by our pal Matt from Comicosity, who right now he is still at work because he is his work has him live tweeting some kind of reality TV show. I think it's actually America's Next. I think it's a Top Chef America. But
I want that job. That's a great job.
I'm gonna say it's Bachelorette North Dakota is the reality show he's live tweeting right now. So he'll join. He's expected to join.
Do you think if I was on Bachelorette North Dakota, I'd have a shot?
With all the other North Dakota guys, yeah, for sure.
Cool. Did I get introduced?
Not yet.
I was building up the drama. And our extra special guest, cue music.
I can't. It won't work. That's the music.
Tell me what it is and I'll hum it.
The music is also not on the podcast this week.
No. I had the most killer entrance music lined up and it won't work.
Well...
So
Let's
we
just
are
have
off.
You on again next week.
Yeah, and I'll figure that all out.
All right. Well, we'll just hum you something. Hold on.
It was so
something
good.
Adequate.
No, it was like a rip roaring. It was like a rip roaring '70s like porn bass line. Oh, baby, I'm gonna leave the show. I'm gonna leave the show and come back next week just because that's so disappointing.
I could do. That's awesome. I could do the NWO from Store the theme.
What was the NWO theme?
It's not actually it. That's totally not it. It's pretty close. It's pretty much 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, Kowalczyk. Kowalczyk is on our show. His name is Scott Kowalczyk.
That's pretty good. What? Okay, how about the theme to Reading Rainbow? What was that?
I had no cable as a kid. I was so...
Damn it, I was hoping somebody would remember it.
I don't know.
But
I don't remember.
Let's just talk about Reading Rainbow.
Did you see LeVar Burton doing Go the Fuck to Sleep? No. Reading that? That was excellent.
That I don't know what that is.
What?
I've had pneumonia for the last six weeks. I'm basically dead.
You've been around for a lot longer than that. For the past 10 years because you've had pneumonia for 6 weeks. I actively despise children. I still know what children. And I still know what Go the Fuck to Sleep is.
How actively are we talking?
I hang around school grounds just to hate kids.
That's creepy on a lot.
You'll cross the street to kick one.
I will kick one across the street. Go and then go after it for a second.
I like that it was referred to as it.
So the guy who loves comic books does not like kids. Irony here.
Comic books are not for kids.
Explain that book to him.
That's not ironic. Comic books are not for kids.
Not anymore.
Well, good. Let's get in this talk again. Jesus Christ, you guys. Come on.
Our guest is Scott Kowalczyk.
I'm done. I'm out of here.
Hey, everybody, let me do it, Keith.
I don't approve of comics for kids, but if I was going to approve of comics that were age-appropriate for kids, it would be Batman 66, which very, very soon will be drawn by the great Scott Kowalczyk.
Well, not very, very soon. It's on its way out. Ladies and gentlemen, we are finally joined by the artist of the award-winning Intrepids, Mysterious Strangers from Oni Press, as well as the excellent Downset Fight, and soon coming out, Batman, my God, 66.
That was good. That was a real...
There we go. I'll put my, for the video podcast, I'll put my copy of Downset Fight up there.
Downset Fight. I wanted to just specify that Intrepids won absolutely no awards.
It was nominated.
No, I don't think it was.
All right, then
it was nominated for some.
It was nominated by the Library Association of I don't know North
America. How do I know this? If you don't.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question.
We have always described this as the award eligible.
That's a good one. What award would you be up for?
There is a Schuster Award for podcasts, I believe.
Is there really?
I think so. There's an Eisner for podcasts, that's for sure.
I've never been nominated for a Schuster. I don't really understand that. I mean, I deserve it, obviously.
Obviously. But I think they just give them all to Fiona now.
Yeah. She deserves them.
It's the Fiona Award.
Yeah. Fiona should just get a perpetual award at every show. So that's just
best retailer. This doesn't seem appropriate, but it says I don't get it. But
best.
All right, Brad, explain the book to him.
Shut
up and let Brett talk for once.
We were talking LeVar Burton.
Really? Well, that seems
there's a subsection of children's books that are that feature plenty of swearing and are complete takeoffs on kind and children's books, but really are just evil and swear filled. That is one of them.
Yeah, it's called Go the Fuck to Sleep, and the audio version was done by Samuel Jackson.
Yep.
Really?
Yeah. And it's very famous. Samuel Jackson did it, and this week LeVar Burton has been making the rounds doing some charity work and different things. And has been performing live versions of this book, this profanity-filled book, which, since he's been on Reading Rainbow forever and he's the G-rated guy, and Star Trek as well, is being very well received by people.
So LeVar is going to be the Bob Saget of Star Trek TNG.
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
That's it, exactly.
Only funnier.
Yeah, except for...
Now,
I don't know how to say, I kind of like Bob Saget's stand-up. He's
Now I need to feel LeVar. I need LeVar Burton to do the Aristocrats joke now.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, I'd kind of like the entire TNG cast to do the Aristocrats joke.
Yes, I would accept that.
Like in a, in the round?
Like, yeah, yeah, like finished off by Patrick Stewart. You know?
Done. That's good. That's what they should have done when they all appeared in Calgary.
That would have literally brought the house down.
Yeah. So since I've had pneumonia, I'm going to talk about myself for a little bit. I'm not drinking on the podcast tonight, so expect me to not be funny at all.
We never expect you to be.
Well, I'm just saying.
It's more of a byproduct of crazy, really, you know.
Well, that's, you make a fine point.
Yeah.
See, I can't, without alcohol, there's just, I'm just sitting on the other end here going, well, I'm playing with my little mini-me toy.
Now, my question is, that can be taken more than one way.
Thankfully, this is an audio podcast, so you know this mini-me toy.
We can drop 3 X's on the synopsis for this one after my saying that.
Pretty much.
Explicit XXX. Scott talks about his mini me. That's not terribly mini.
That's, minis are, is a relative term.
It's still handheld.
Well, yeah, like it, you know, like two hands, but still, that's a whole other story. I wish Chris was here.
Nobody's ever said that before.
Well, not after talking about two-handed fist pump on. Woo! Getting steamy over here.
It is. It is. So, what's MSG coming on the show to do? Why is he joining us? What's his? Does he have a purpose? He just wants to talk to Scott.
Well, it was theoretically we were going to talk about you know, some of the recent Batman number ones, but you know, I don't think any of us actually read them, so. I think I've tricked him into coming on to the show.
Who's MSG?
Matt Centauri
Griffith.
Ah, I've heard of the legend, but I've never spoken to the man. He's a man, right?
Yeah. He's all man.
He's mostly man.
To be fair, he's more machine than man.
He's more of a one-handed fist pump as opposed to two.
anyway, he's not here to defend himself yet. So.
You can ask.
I better not let DC know that I'm recording this.
Yeah, that seems a good idea.
You promote the show and you said what? You're on this show to promote the book and what? What? You're talking about doing what to your fist pump?
Yeah. What are you doing to your mini-me on Skype, you... yeah, Dan DiDio has a stroke.
Well, then you should tell.
Yeah. Well.
No, man, just kidding. I'm going to get in trouble, Scott.
The way they are adding weekly books, they will need Scott soon.
Are they doing a lot of weeklies?
They're at 3 weeklies right now.
Which ones?
Future's End, which is the first thing I read every week, which is the takes place 5 years from now, dystopic future. World's End, which is the Earth 2 weekly, and is likely to be the end of the Earth 2 universe. And Batman Eternal, which is all Batman all the time. It's like a Gotham comic.
And then you mean the digital books they're doing doesn't count as weekly?
Well, yeah, and then the digital first books, they're up. They've got 7.
Most of those aren't actually weekly, though, so.
Some of them revolve, yeah, because Arrow and Flash alternate weeks. And Smallville's just about to end, being replaced, soon to be replaced by Wonder Woman 77.
I'm so excited for that book.
Yeah, that's. Might as well just jump. That was going to be the only thing I had for the news. So yeah, Wonder Woman 77 based on the TV series.
I appreciate that.
I just on
Wonder Woman as a topic. I just watched the David E. Kelly, Adrian Pilecki pilot.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, goddamn, that thing was good.
Oh, God. I don't know what's wrong with you.
Adrian was like, I like her quite a bit. I've seen her in a few other movies. And I really get a good vibe off of her. But man, every time she was walking around as Diana, it was just like, dude, that's Wonder Woman. She just absolutely had that look and presence, and fuck, I love that pilot.
She just got added to the added to the cast of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, Mockingbird, right?
Yeah, Mockingbird.
Yeah, I watched a movie with her and Carla Gugino called Electra Lux. It's about a porn star who became pregnant and got out of the industry, and it was sort of a mockumentary. It was beautiful. It was a really fun film. And they were both super good in it and very lovely. So Adrian Fleckie, if you're listening, which I assume you are, you're a very beautiful woman.
Yeah, well, I mean, she's on my all-time favorite television show.
Getting hot in here.
My all-time favorite television show, Friday Night Lights, and she starred on that for several years. So
I've never seen it.
That's my favorite show ever.
Nor have I, actually.
Yeah, I'm ages behind on TV. I actually just finished watching season 2 of Arrow like a month ago.
So I'm like in season 6 of Cheers is where I am. So
don't tell me how MASH ends.
Yeah. You can see it's great. You can take time off the podcast and yet nothing changes.
No, we're not.
What happened in season 6 of Cheers?
Well, this is the first season of Diane's Gone here. Now we got
Diane was on for 5 years.
She was on for 5, or maybe it was after year 4.
I only thought she was on for like 2.
No, it was definitely more than that. It was at least 4, maybe 5. I'm trying to remember. Maybe it is. Anyways, let's.
Okay. So this is actually a really nice segue, because Shelley Long played a villain on Lois and Clark, the 90s TV show with Terry Hatcher and Dean Cain. And if Wonder Woman 77 came into existence, I very much hope a Lois and Clark comic would, because I'd draw...
Clark 93?
Yeah, I'd draw the shit out of that.
And Terry Hatcher is a lovely woman.
Terry Hatcher's a beautiful woman. But my real intent would be to draw Bronson Pinchot as the prankster, because he and I basically are identical twins.
Oh my God, I can't believe it. I have joked about that to the other guys.
Really?
But never brought it up to you for fear it would offend you too much.
No, I was at a comic convention once. Which one was it? It might have been in Toronto. And this woman was walking, you know, like 20, 25 feet away from me, and she beelined toward me and just said, "You look exactly like Bronson Pinchot." And I thought, Jesus Christ, that's weird. Like, that is a weird thing for
admittedly,
somebody.
When I say I don't want to insult you, I don't call him Bronson Pinchot. I just refer to you as Balky.
You totally should have threatened her with the Dance of Joy.
I don't remember the Dance of Joy.
Watch
it's
it.
It's kind of like a one-handed fist pump.
I would have charged her $40 for an autograph, is what I would have.
Oh, that's a good idea. Next time.
I do autographs and photo ops. So, you know,
Mark Lynn Baker, cousin Larry, and I share the same birth date. So there's
you're just a perfect stranger's, you know,
when
thing.
My mind.
I still remember the Bibi Bobka song. Do you remember the Bibi Bobka episode where they try to make his like traditional dessert food, the Bibi Bobkas, and then get really successful, but they're trying to turn out, you know, boxes and boxes of these things, and all the fun goes out of making desserts. When you're Bobkas? Rolling out the
and
dough,
Bibi Bobkas,
roll it so. Awesome.
And that was 22 minutes. Well, where was Balky from?
What was it called? It was something, it wasn't Mykonos.
Oh, yeah. You're close.
Yeah.
So, Scott, we did in August, you were on the beers in the patio with Riley.
Yeah.
The audio was lost. We didn't think we'd be able to recover it on that recorder. We just actually got the audio for that up yesterday.
Nice.
And we open up that show talking about the facts of life. So I'm seeing a theme when you're on.
Yeah, there really is one.
Yeah. There really is one. I basically stopped watching TV in like 1989, so that's my frame of reference for anything.
Your dad.
The fact that I'm talking about Lois and Clark from 1993, huge. That's a huge step forward for me.
Now, I just want to get back to comic books for a second here. We talk about Terry Hatcher. You talk about, you know, you can talk about the Julie Newmar and stuff like that. Pre, let's say, 2000.
Yeah.
Who was, do you think, the hottest woman in a television series with comic books?
Terry Hatcher. I don't like
Amanda. Like Amanda Pays. There's no real competition there.
Oh, really? That's true. She was good. Yeah.
Are you sure it's not Linda Carter?
No, yeah, I mean, how can you not go Linda Carter?
Because they just want Amanda Pays. I will also say I've never actually seen an episode of the original Wonder Woman series.
Really? Good Lord.
Because again, I didn't grow up with cable, so if it didn't play and it didn't play in rerun, I thought I had. And then when I was talking to Matt at one point, I was explaining this episode, and he's like, "That's the Bionic Woman. That's not Wonder Woman."
That's awesome.
Like, gosh darn it, that is the Bionic Woman. I have never seen an episode of Wonder Woman.
I have all three seasons if you want it.
Not particularly.
You don't. You don't.
I do.
Actually. If you want to watch
any of them, one of those. Wasn't there a great documentary on the show on one of those DVD releases?
I watched the documentary.
Yeah, it was great.
I doubt I'd ever watch the show, but I might watch the documentary.
I watched it while I was while I'd walk on the treadmill and I enjoyed it.
Walk on the treadmill. I'm sorry, Brett. That's adorable.
Hey, you know what? You know what? Sometimes you go back to these things and they hit. Sometimes they don't. I mean, I remember watching the first 10 episodes of Buck Rogers on DVD when I got it a couple of years ago. It was great. Episodes 11 through 25. not so good.
The nostalgia factor for a lot of shows is like Wonder Woman. I could not watch season one. I kind of liked season two because it got really goofy. Like they had a talking computer at that point. but like the Incredible Hulk as well. I loved the pilot for that TV show like to death. And then I tried to watch an episode and it was just, I can't do this. There's no way I can get through it.
No, it's really, I remember my excitement when they brought back the Hulk for those movies and they had Thor and Daredevil and you saw what Thor and Daredevil looked like and you're like, no.
I love that they're basically using the Daredevil costume from the Trial of the Incredible Hulk as the costume in the Netflix series.
I thought they looked really familiar too.
Love it.
They just dug it out of storage.
Yeah.
There's also rumor that they're going to make a weekly digital based on the Schumacher Batman.
I'm one of like three people who loved Batman Forever more than the other four films of that series.
Batman Forever or more than Batman and Robin? See, the thing is, if you're talking to Schumacher, so you would do the Val Kilmer, not the George Clooney. Yeah, I'd like to see you draw the George Clooney because I'd like to see how it is you manage to get his head to shake constantly in every panel.
That's it? Did he do that in the movie?
That's perfect, for the DC2 motion comics, though.
Yeah, it really would be.
Just every panel, his head moves just a little bit back and forth.
I'll give you one thing about this.
That's the entire
thing. You get like 87 extra page turns because whenever he's talking, he's going to roll back and forth.
Next time you're watching TV and you stumble across it, watch him and just watch his head just shake around like he's got Parkinson's. Like, what? You know,
I will put the DVD on tonight and watch it.
Third most.
Yeah, Michael J. Fox was cast in this instead. Like, it's.
Oh, no. That's dirty joke. I'm not doing that one. I don't think you can joke about Parkinson's disease.
I'm not joking. I'm saying it's truthful. This is what he looks
there because I didn't.
I mean, I would never make a joke. It'd be pretty. I mean, that would be pretty shaky ground of me to make a joke about Michael J. Fox's Parkinson's.
Well, I mean, this is starting to sound a lot like backpedaling, Mo. But let's just talk about Lois and Clark. Like now that we've talked about. My Bronson Pinchot likeness, like I'm just stuck on that now.
Okay.
I can't believe everybody sees it.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, I would love a continuation of the Schumacher films. Because
I'll say this about the Schumacher films, despite the George Clooney thing.
Yeah.
Like, visually, as a... what I love about Batman and Robin is, as bad as the movie is, the set design is amazing.
It's gorgeous. It, like, both films were gorgeous.
Yeah.
Like, the Riddler's lair in Batman Forever was, like... remarkable. As beautiful as the set design was in, like, Batman and Batman Returns, there was never a set piece that really struck me the same way that that one did.
It was it had nice set designs and had nice costumes, and it was shot and it was shot better. But actual set design, actual inventiveness of it, because it had more color to it.
Yeah, they like used
from color. From an artistic point of view, if you're going to do a series on it, I mean, I think, yeah, I mean, that would be the most fun to draw.
Well, it would be so appropriate for a comic book too. Like the Smallville comic, I never quite understood because the series, I only watched the first two or three episodes, but it was never colorful. Like it was just a guy on a farm. But like the Schumacher Batmans would look so shit hot in a comic book.
Yeah, they would. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway,
they couldn't do a worse story. So
I still always like the Edward Nygma as like the single white female Bruce Wayne. I always thought that was a really good, like, I always thought that was a really good bet.
Could they have blown, like, is there any possible way to have taken Two-Face and fucked him up more?
Yeah, I always look at Two-Face in that movie and go, it'd have been pretty cool if it was Billy Dee Williams.
Yes.
Like,
yes,
dude comes out and is just like as cool as ice, baby. Like, as opposed to, like, you know, Tommy Lee Jones was really, really hyper, but, like, just thinking about Billy Dee Williams is just, like, super cool.
Well, I mean, Keith, analytically, yeah. You are, nobody loves Two-Face more than you.
Mm-hmm.
What, how did they get that wrong? How many levels did they get that wrong?
I don't know why it's such a train wreck, because I couldn't have been more excited going into that film. Like, Two-Face, my favorite villain. Tommy Lee Jones at the time was my favorite actor. You know, he had done The Fugitive and The Park Is Mine, and he did this amazing movie about a spree killer called The Executioner's Song, based on a true story about the last man executed by firing squad in the United States, Gary Gilmore, and then it's just a train wreck. It's that we're in such a golden age of comic book movies that we don't remember that people had no idea what made comic books good and how to put that on the screen. So you ended up with like a lot of overacting, a lot of, they thought comic book meant cartoony. And it was just over stylized.
See, I'm sort of a mindset where I look back to, you know, say the Batmans from the 90s, and I vastly prefer those films, even though they didn't always capture the essence of the character from the comic book. But I vastly prefer those, and maybe it's nostalgia more than anything, than necessarily the films today. Like, I'm not, as much as I appreciate the Marvel movies, I don't really like them. And like, that's not to say that there's anything wrong with them. There isn't. They're really not for me. Like, they're played with that sort of that overtone of seriousness that I don't know. I like the cartoony aspect of comics. So I'm not the target audience.
There is certainly a school that doesn't care for the Nolan film because they are more serious. They are a darker tone.
I liked them. They had Ra's al Ghul in them, and it was fucking Liam Neeson. Desert Island. If you had to pick like one actor, like in only movies from only one actor, I would always take Liam Neeson's like library of movies with me to a desert island because you get everything. Mostly the A Team, which was awesome.
Not according to Dirk Benedict.
If you have
that's the one time in your entire life where you're going to go, what did Dirk Benedict think on this topic? There's nothing else in the world that you would go, I give a crap what Dirk Benedict thinks on this.
Well, we never talked about this. He was at the Edmonton Comic Con there.
Was he really?
Yeah. Murdoch, Dwight Schultz.
Dwight Schultz.
Yeah, and they were great. And we went to you work with me, right? Right, Keith? All three of us went.
Oh yeah. I was all over that one. Yeah, we went to.
It was Chris who almost didn't go, but we talked him into going to that one instead of the horror movie thing. And these guys talked up there, and Dirk Benedict is like the most bitter human being. Like, he's amazing. It was great.
Yeah.
Dude lives in the middle of the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Cabin alone because he just hates everything.
Do you know like his biography, his history?
Just what I was able to get from that.
He I think it was shortly after A-Team wrapped, he ended up with I think it was prostate cancer. And I think he had just gotten divorced, so he had his kids with him. So that's when he moved to the cabin in the woods. And he went on this like macrobiotic diet or whatever and like kicked it, like cured his prostate cancer by just living healthy.
He still smokes the cigars.
Really? That's awesome. Oh, yeah. Is he still the most beautiful man on the planet?
No, that's you, Scott.
No, it's not. I look like Bronson Pinchot.
You know what? If Bronson Pinchot and Dirk Benedict had a love child, it'd be you.
That is awesome. I hope they did have a love child. And I hope it is me. Like, I should get some DNA tests.
The stuff that happened at night on Battle of the Network Stars.
Okay, let's talk about the A-Team movie for a minute. So
I saw it, actually.
You only watch the extended version. The theatrical version, I actually don't think is very good. The extended version gets a lot of like character development, and you get the team building and becoming kind of this, you know, sexy like army unit. Beautiful.
I had no idea there was an extended version. I mean, I'm trying to imagine the sales pitch of, did you think there wasn't enough 18 movie? Well, like, you could have 5 minutes more.
There was probably about 15 or 20 minutes more from the theatrical version, and it was all character development. It was all character development, and it was all development of the team working together. It was awesome.
I can see why they thought they would cut that out.
Yeah,
I can too for like the theater, but man, did it add a lot.
I hoped for a sequel just because you know that they would go with the B team, and we would finally find out what that was about. I mean, it's 22 Jump Street. It's like Ocean 75. It would be the B team.
You know, sometimes you get this. The Daredevil film, the original, the theatrical cut, really not very good. But the director's cut, pretty damn good. And that's like an extra 4 minutes or something.
That's because the director's cut of Daredevil waters down Bullseye in the film. Is really the biggest thing it does is that there's no extra Bullseye. So Bullseye becomes a smaller part of the film. And you notice more and more that that's actually what doesn't work in the movie. The rest of the film works, except for Bullseye. Because, again, he's too cartoon.
It was Elektra that was the weakness of the film for me. And it still has that horrible scene where she's fighting a blind man. Like, that would be okay. This blind guy wants to talk to me. I'll take a swing at him. Would happen.
He may have just been wearing red sunglasses and carrying a cane.
There's a hashtag. Not all blind men.
I'd fight the shit out of a blind guy.
You know what? I think I could probably take him. Like that's my advantage. That would be I'd be 1-0 in a fight then.
Especially if he had Parkinson's.
Line it up.
Oh, that's good. A blind man with Parkinson's disease. We see on the street beaten up by Mo. I'll just
you soak think that you're up. Tough? You think you're tough?
What do we do? Like,
but he'd be wearing that leather midriff thing that Elektra had on.
Everybody else just be standing around going, "Is this okay? This is okay, right?"
You guys are fighting on seesaws.
Yes, horrible movie. But it adds in a whole other subplot, like a trial with who was it? It was like Coolio or something like that.
Mo, all I'm thinking about now is you and Parkinson's disease on a seesaw, just going back and forth, like just having fun.
Scott, could you draw that for us, please? That would.
You know where I also I could probably beat a blind Parkinson's man there. I'd have a chance to beat him in a log rolling contest. As long as we're doing
a slim chance, seesaw. He probably still has better balance than you do.
Well, I said I have a chance. It's not a lock. I mean, I'm not.
Okay, this is becoming like a thing. Like, okay, so what else could Mo and the blind Parkinson's guy do? You guys could race down a snowy hill on like a bobsled.
I think the obvious solved crime.
Solve crime.
No, that's true.
No, it cannot be like they cannot collaborate. It has to be competitive.
Well, I think okay. So I think toboggan race, and I'll take you, Scott, and we'll take down the blind.
Toboggan race, potato sack race.
Yeah, obviously.
I don't know.
You know what? Apple bobbing.
Oh, the egg on the spoon in your mouth.
Oh, yeah.
Can we say apple bobbing? That's getting a little explicit on the
show. Yeah. Well, you know what?
Corn maze.
Junior mini me.
Corn maze. This is good. This is gold. This is why you guys will get to be nominated for a Schuster.
Oh, it'll be this when we're asked to send in an episode. It'll be this one.
Watch on the committee for the Schuster Awards. There'll be a blind guy with Parkinson's disease.
I don't think this is funny. I don't know why they're talking about this so incessantly.
Oh. Blind guy with Parkinson's, dance off.
Oh. That would be an instance where you guys could collaborate.
Served.
Yeah, you guys could collaborate on that one and do like a Dancing with the Stars type of thing.
Yeah.
I only know what Dancing with the Stars is because of Fandango on WWE Wrestling. That's the only reason that I have any frame of reference for that.
Because they have a character who they put on once or twice a year who's based on a Fans Dance with the Stars gimmick.
Yeah, he's a great character.
Yeah,
we could talk. Great song. We could talk about wrestling for a while.
Now let's go back here. What we're gonna do here? I'm gonna take over.
Are we gonna talk about Lois and Clark 93?
No, we're gonna talk about Batman 66. Because I mean, seriously, we're gonna talk about it a little bit before MSG shows up.
Okay.
Because I want to talk about this a little bit here, Scott. Because I want to go back, right? Because I was reading your Scott's...
Go back in time with Michael J. Fox.
Let's go back in time, because I was reading you the Scott's snazzy sketch blog.
Sure.
There, it was on there, and you're talking about this is a dream job for you. So let's go back. Let's talk. I want to talk about this. I want people to understand, like, how did this come apart? Because you were at the... How did this come about? Because it's going to be... It's not out today. Like, we're recording this on October 29th.
Yeah.
And this episode will probably be out on the weekend of October 29th, whatever that is. It'll be like November 1st or whatever, something like that, November 2nd, in that range, right? And when is the actual book coming out here, Scott? Do you know?
I don't. Print, it comes out on November 26th. Digitally, I'm not entirely sure how the Batman 66 release schedule works. It might be next week or it might be the week after.
Okay. Now... When you were on our Super Summit.
Yeah.
It was our second one. It was Emotionally Subnormal, I think it was called. And at the time, when it wrapped up, I said, this is a man who's got to do Batman 66.
Yeah.
I remember. Mentioned on this show there at that point in time, you said, there's somebody I know, he's an editor of mine at Oni. And he's really behind me and he's trying to help me out because I'm at a crossroads where I'm in the business where it's like, can I keep on pursuing this? I got a family. Do I have to go to something else? And I said, well, you got to draw that book. And you looked very pleased and you went, thanks, Mo. And then we found out later on, like 3 months later, we talked to you and you mentioned happening. That, we weren't allowed to say anything for a while.
But yeah, it would have been
the time was happening, and I was ecstatic for you. So how did it exactly? What's the kind of the genesis of this, Scott? How did this just kind of come together?
It was without naming names because I don't want him to get upset with. I don't want his publisher getting upset with him. But a friend of mine, who may or may not be an editor, Put
you
me
can just edit that part out, right, Editor Brett?
That's fine. put me in contact at the Emerald City Comic Convention in 2014 with Jeff Parker. He had worked with Jeff Parker in a book, and they had just, I don't know, got talking about me, probably because of how much I look like Bronson Pinchot, and they were just having that conversation. And my friend told Jeff, you know, it would be a dream job for him. And I kind of have a Twitter relationship with Jeff Parker. And anyway, he and I got to talking at the convention, and then we started batting ideas back and forth just over email, which was kind of exciting and still really surreal. Like, am I drawing an issue? Am I not drawing an issue? We're talking about Batman 66. And
was he familiar at all with your work up to this point?
He was familiar with Mysterious Strangers and Downset Fight. And ooh, that's a good plug for both of those. So go buy them. We were just batting ideas back and forth, and he said DC would need some material from me to know that I could actually represent the likenesses of the actors and everyone involved on the show and the actors whom they had likeness rights for, which is actually a little bit more limited than I had originally thought. But so I put together and it's on my blog at you can go to scottkowalchuk.com or scottkowalchuk.tumblr.com and see my pitch material, which was just a single page of the John Aston Riddler, who I loved. I always got a kick. That was always my favorite Riddler episode. It was, I always thought it was the best written of all the Riddler episodes. But everybody hated John Aston as the Riddler because Frank Gorshin was so just became that role. Like, I still don't even see Frank Gorshin. I see the Riddler. But anyway, I did it for fun. And Jeff loved it, and he passed it along to the editor, and I did character designs and mocked up some other ideas. And yeah, that was sort of that was the lead up to actually being offered an issue of Batman 66.
Now, Batman, when you were a couple of years ago, you were here in Calgary at the Calgary Convention, I think it was the 2012 one, Adam West was there. And the three of us were getting our picture taken with him. At the time, we invited you to be there.
I was in line with you guys.
You were. At first, you said, I don't think I can do it, because if I'm standing next to him, he's such a hero of mine, I'm going to soil myself.
Yeah,
we said, we'll let you stand next to Keith.
Yeah.
And then,
who's also a hero of mine.
Who's also a hero of yours. And you were in line with us. And unfortunately, there was an incident. I guess your daughter had cut her hand or something. Something along those lines. I can't remember exactly what it was. And you had to run out. And you missed this. But we knew it was like you were such a huge fan.
Yeah.
Even back then. But like I say, when I was on your sketch blog, your snazzy sketch blog, you were talking about how anytime anybody asked you to draw Batman, you were drawing the Adam West Batman, even prior to this.
Yeah.
How you had done you had created a pitch for a cartoon based on the series.
Yeah.
This was back when you were still attending college, I believe, right?
Yeah, I in fourth year college, the wheels just kind of the wheels came off and the doors came open. It was just like do whatever you want. So it was just like, well, fuck, I'm just going to draw Batman 66 like every day of every week. So I came up with an idea for a visual history of the book of the TV show, which I think I mocked up 3 or 4 pages. You can find a couple of them on my blog.
That's right. It looks almost like something from a Mad Magazine style.
Yeah. Look. Yeah.
It's really cool. I had never seen you draw like that. I'm like, wow, that's really cool too.
Yeah, I appreciate it. That was a long time ago. But and then the animated show. And it was just the show aesthetically. That's why I love the Joel Schumacher Batman so much, because aesthetically they share such a similarity. Aesthetically as well as, you know, kind of fundamentally to the TV show, which at the time people were really turned off by, but I was still really turned on by. The entire aesthetic of that show was what contributed to my wanting to just draw, period, because it was so fun. It was so lighthearted. And
right from the time you started drawing, right in junior high and that type of thing, this is what you were doing?
Yeah.
Like, he's drawing Batman again? Is that basically
what we were saying? Well, when I was a kid, like when the Tim Burton Batman came out, the the Adam West TV show was being replayed in heavy, heavy rotation, which was awesome because it was totally new to me. So as my my 8-year-old self, who had grown up on Super Friends and Superpowers and everything, and who was really into wrestling at that point in time, got this Batman, which was basically just 22 minutes of, you know, the two of them, Batman and Robin, cracking jokes, solving crimes, and then wrestling with the villains for, you know, 5 minutes at the end of each episode. It was great. Like, it fed into everything that I was interested in as an 8-year-old boy. Not girls or sex or anything at that point, which I'm glad about and kind of weird saying out loud now. But it kind of hit at that time where I was really ripe for needing something creative to fuel me forward.
So we're talking about something that intrinsically is a huge part of your life. Your personality and who you became, this isn't just some gig for you.
No, that's the thing. Like, I'm really close to the TV show because it, which is crazy because it's something that, you know, like comic books, is just meant to be consumed. But like, the artistry of it was what really attracted me. And, you know, the artistry behind the writing, you know, the set production, the costume design, you know, the character development, how, you know, a villain like David Wayne's Mad Hatter evolved from his first two appearances to his last two appearances, just, you know, with him developing a different voice for the character and a different style. And it embedded in me at a very young age, which I didn't really understand, just this... this appetite for being creative. Like, you know, we watch the shows, we watch the movies, and we take it all in. But until I actually got to that point where I started deconstructing it and looking at it as an art rather than entertainment that I was meant to consume, it opened up an entire world for me artistically as I grew older. But at that young age, like, that's still stuff that you're processing. And
so probably if people who've known you for years, and they think of their art, they might think of you drawing Batman even mm-hmm. before. This is it. This is what you're drawing. It's Batman again. So now the character in this book, the mm-hmm. villain, is a character that was created originally just for the TV show. And mm-hmm. I don't think it's even shown up in anything near the same format in the books. At one point, I think he actually had to have a different name, Pharaoh. But we're talking about King Tut.
Yeah, my favorite villain from the TV show.
Yeah. So, what is it about King Tut then, and how did King Tut become the storyline? Did you throw the name around to Jeff? The fact that you're doing your favorite, is that just a coincidence?
That is actually a coincidence. As far as I know, I never mentioned to Jeff that King Tut was my favorite villain. Victor Buono, who played the character. There were a couple characters on the show that I really thought embodied the spirit of the television show, and he was one of them. I kind of think Egghead was, Vincent Price, was another, where it was just these characters that were, you know, not the Riddler, not the Penguin, not the Joker, that were just so outlandish that would only ever fit on the Batman TV show. Like a guy who gets conked on the head and has some bizarre form of amnesia that makes him believe he is the reincarnation of King Tut, that only works on the Batman TV show. Like, the only time it kind of worked in comics and the character became a little bit of a joke, which made me sad, was Maxi Zeus, who was, as far as I can tell, Danny O'Neill created him in the late 70s. He was just King Tut, but with, you know, Zeus. But he, for me, was just the villain equivalent of everything that that show embodied. He was colorful. He was funny. He did this, you know, this really comedic voice that would go from, you know, very low to very high to, you know, he was almost vaudevillian, which was a beautiful compliment to to that show. So for me, that character was just the physical embodiment of everything that I loved about Batman. And I've heard people whom I kind of don't know if they really understood the spirit of the show, like Len Wein. I just read an article where he was interviewed, and he was talking about his adaptation of the Harlan Ellison Two-Face script. And he had said in the article, like, there were characters I didn't understand, like King Tut. I didn't get him. I was just like, but King Tut was, like, for me anyways, and this is, you know, this is probably just, you know, personal nostalgia kicking in. He was that show, man. Like, if you put a villain on display on that show, King Tut was the only one that, for me, I don't know, he just embodied it, and I really loved him for it. So to draw him was an absolute blast.
Well, like I say, it's hard to imagine somebody being created for the show who's a better fit, right? I mean, because he was created there first. I mean, when they brought him back in the comic books, I mean, they made him all dark, and he was killing all the rich people in Gotham or something like that. And it's like, that's not...
He was super trim, and he had abs and like a perfect Brad Pitt physique. And it was just like, fuck off, dude. That's like, I get it for the comic books. That's what he has to be. But it wasn't for me, man.
It wasn't the right. So now, does he bring it up to you first? Does he send you an email saying, I'm thinking of doing a story with King Tut? Or do you get this script and it's like, oh, it's King Tut. Holy shit.
Yeah, Jeff said, I'm writing up an outline. I think it's going to be King Tut. And I just said, good, great. Let's just do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, like, who else am I going to draw? Like, there's every villain on that show I do love for different reasons. But King Tut was always, for me, just perfect. So I didn't say anything. I just, yep, let's do it.
Nice. Now, what is kind of, without giving away any spoilers, obviously, what is the plot of this issue?
King Tut, it starts with him and his alter ego, Professor William McElroy. That was me meowing. And
you're that excited when you're talking about King Tut.
I know. It just comes out of my pores, the meow.
Excuse me, pardon me.
So he starts out in his alter ego and, you know, inevitably gets conked on the head. And then in his King Tut guise develops a virus called the Osiris virus, which turns the denizens of Gotham City into his obedient zombies.
Okay, that sounds cool. And the cover, of course, is done by Mike and Laura Allred, right?
Who's the beautiful Mike and Laura.
Unbelievable. Allred.
Yeah,
I've seen the cover there. You posted that again also up there. And I'm like, when you see that cover, I think you said buy the book. And yeah, the cover is gorgeous. And I'm sure your art will be a perfect complement to that. Because, I mean, you don't get better than those two.
They've been really supportive of me from sort of the outset of my career in comic books. So they really hold a special place in my heart.
Because you've had some sort of relationship with them for a while now.
A lot of emails back and forth with Mike. Mike's aesthetic was always something that appealed to me, and Laura's colors. I'm kind of hard on colorists sometimes, and Laura is one who I always feel is sort of the, you know, sort of one of the three, you know, best in the business, because she just, it, like, colors are vibrant and they're beautiful and they add so much and they stand on their own and they create, you know, within Mike's artwork, they turn it into, pop art rather than just, you know, comic book art.
She brings it to life.
Yeah. Yeah, no, like
I definitely agree.
She flicks a switch on with his work and others that I've seen her work with, and it's a really lovely thing.
It'd be nice if we can get her to do your work, because I mean I look at your artwork and I think Mike Allred must have had some influence on you. I mean, it's not, you're certainly not a clone of him, but there you can definitely see an influence.
Yeah, no, they were when I was in college, I had studying illustration. Their X-Force, which predated X-Statics, I don't know what it was about that book, but just aesthetically, the colors were a little bit more muted, but still brighter than anything else that was on the market. And it was just, it was just this bright light in a sea of, you know, kind of really dark, you know, muted tones, in comic books that just didn't really appeal to my heart. And, you know, consumption of material aside, like, it is an art form. Mm-hmm. And, you know, anytime I'm going to, like, take in and enjoy an art form, like, you know, I've recently gotten back into wrestling, which Mo and I have talked about.
Yeah, we might go to WrestleMania together. I'm hoping it works out. That would be kicking ass. Brett might come too then.
Is that it? Okay, we'll talk after we're done.
Yeah.
But
I'm already going. It's just a matter of whether or not you guys are going.
I know. I'm looking into flights right now. But I've recently gotten back into it, and you know, there's an artistry and there's an art form to it, which I always really took for granted as a kid, but now I'm starting to realize is there. And the appeal for me is something, you know, bright and colorful and, you know, something with a little bit more depth than, you know, a superficial aesthetic. And that's not to say that, you know, the work that was done, you know, throughout the time that I was in college and was, you know, kind of mainstream, you know, comic book canon wasn't attractive. It just wasn't attractive to me. It's the same way that the Marvel films, as much as I appreciate them, I'm not a fan of them. And that doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with them. They're just not for me. So finding those instances for me as an artist of an aesthetic that really appeals to me is a really lovely, just a really lovely moment, because my aesthetic is probably a little too specific. So when I find those, you know, those instances like Mike and Laura's work, where something really speaks to me, or Batman or wrestling right now, it's a really nice moment of inspiration.
And by the way, the adorable Adrian Adonis that you did, I don't know if I ever told you this. We once used it as our show picture for We Talk Wrestling because it was
great. Really? I've never seen that.
Yeah, they did. Of course, my co-host Addy listed it as me. He said that was me, not her. But other than that,
you should go as Adrian Adonis for Halloween. That'd be really good.
Unfortunately, I don't dress up for Halloween because I'm not 10. But but again, I want to talk to you a little bit about drawing for the digital medium, because that's different. It's the first time you've done that. But I don't want to completely bogart you like from the other guys here. So let's open it up in case they have a question. This is the interview portion here. And I know Matt had tried to join us there and it failed or something. What's going on?
Matt has sent me a note that America's Next Top North Dakotan Model is running long. So he'll be joining us just a couple minutes.
Okay, sounds good. So
is that code for diarrhea? That seems like it's code for
diarrhea. But anyways, you guys, I'll open it up to you two, but I do want to talk a little bit about the digital drawing for the digital art form at some point.
No questions.
You guys got nothing? All that? You got nothing? I had like 47 questions from Scott based on what he said, but
I want to hear all 47 before Scott talks again.
That's right.
Just rapid fire.
And then we're all going to just leave and just let you like talk.
Come on, guys. Come on. It's Scott fucking Kowalczyk right here with us. Come on.
Well, Scott, you've talked to me offline about the process of doing a DC2 book. Of doing a DC2, for those who don't know, is the Turbo Comics that DC do. It is so it's the equivalent of Marvel's Infinite or a book like Valentine from Throwbent. That aspects of, it's not a motion comic, but aspects of a panel can change as you page through. Which really on Comixology gives you like, it says that it's got like 140 pages, which sounds like you're going to get a monster book for 99 cents or for $1.99. But you get a very, very enjoyable, not monster book for $1.99.
I felt ripped off a couple times before I figured that out. Like I said.
What's the,
like it's a, it says 317 pages. I read it in a minute and a half. What the?
What? That's because his head was shaking, so it was on his right. Battles.
Yeah, it's just George Clooney's head back and forth. Back and forth.
That would be a good comic. It was just George Clooney's head. Like, there's no context.
The illustrated bobblehead, yes. That's a...
Oh, good.
Awesome. All right, Keith, ask the question. You've been rambling.
What is the process to create a book?
It's not necessarily complicated, but it's a lot of work. For me, because I still work analog, I would need to, draw the standard page, which would be the print page. And then I would, over top of that page, draw in all of the singular animations. Like, there's a big, the reveal of King Tut on page, I won't reveal it, but King Tut's reveal, I actually put a lot of extra work in, because it was the first moment that I got to draw King Tut, and I got to reveal him as the special guest villain. So it basically just turned into me drawing two panels. So for me, I'm probably just putting a bit too much work into it, because it's, you know, the entire digital medium is still pretty fresh and still pretty new. So it was basically just me drawing two pages for everyone with the varying animation. And, you know, it's not two full pages. Like, some pages there would be, you know, five animations, and some there'd only be two. But the actual process of creating the animations was always, for me, done on a separate piece of paper, and then everything was scanned in and assembled.
Is that creating that animation, is that in the script you get, or is that part of your, you have the freedom on that, or how does that work?
Jeff had a few, there were a few panels where he asked for animations, and they were always really good and always added a lot of fun to the story. But I ended up seeing instances where I could put something in that I thought played toward the digital medium a little bit more. So that was an instance where, you know, those are instances where it was just like, this works. I'm going to put in the extra effort because it's Batman and I'm having a fucking blast doing it. So that's it. So, you know, for me, like, there was, some of the digital animation that I see people do is, they really, emphasize movement. Like, a character will move through a panel, which I don't know necessarily adds any more depth to the story. Like, movement's movement. So the instances where I tried to, for the most part, include the animations within the digital first was, you know, stuff that would happen in one panel then lead into the next. Like, you know, Batman, is covered in his cape, and then the animation shows him pulling out a batarang, which, you know, then becomes part of the next panel. You know, elements of storytelling that we don't get in print, because the the medium does sort of have a finite ability of what you can actually implement, whereas digital, you can actually add things like timing, things like, you know, movement, things, various storytelling elements that add a different layer. And that was sort of a really exciting addition to drawing Batman for me, was, you know, seeing this digital landscape, which I think is sort of where the industry is going, and getting to sort of be on the forefront working for, you know, DC on their, you know, their big digital book, going, okay, well, this is, you know, this is a new frontier of storytelling within comic books. Let's just go for it.
So does this, you're working on this, so do you, in your back of your mind, have like 7 or 8 original ideas that have never been done in digital before that you're filing away for future use, you want to try, or what's going on there?
No, it was the, when I read Jeff's script, there was a lot of instances where I thought, like, I started making notes next to them going, okay, I could do something there. I could do something there. I could do something there. And Jim, the editor, really wanted to make sure that we had all of the motion elements nailed down in the layout stage. So when I just kind of send in, you know, my thumbnails of what I think each page will look like based on Jeff's script. And I had a laundry list of, you know, like 10 different animations per page, and like at best I can like physically do 5, and a few instances I could physically only do 2. But no, it was just a lot of you know, reading the script, going, okay, what can I do? When King Tut appears for the first time, that was a moment where I said, okay, I can do something a little extra fun with that because of the addition of the digital medium.
Is it more fun then to draw?
I think it's more fun to draw because it, like, the actual complexity of knowing how everything will fit together is very different from just going, you know, print on page. Like Paul Grist, who does the book Jack Staff, he's one of my favorite creators, and that's one of my favorite books because he's one of the few people in comic books who I feel is creating a new form of storytelling within the medium. Like, he'll have characters looking in on panels from a different dimension, but seeing the panels as if that's, you know, that's currently happening in their existence. And he'll have moments of, you know, a panel break and a character's hand, you know, moving, but the background staying static. So he was creating something, and it still is creating something that I think is very cutting edge within print. But within digital, like, a lot of that can just be done by just drawing additional images.
Does that take something away from the reading experience, you think, for the, now all of a sudden they don't have to feel this? You read, you know, understanding comics, you understand how, you know, Scott McCloud breaks down how it is that we fill in the movement ourselves between panels. And now is that being taken away, or is this?
No, I think this is an addition, because I think that movement between panels and the gutter still exists. But what I can now do digitally within each panel is add a little something extra. Like, I have a book that I really need to get back to working on at Oni, which is sort of a satire of G.I. Joe. And there's elements in that where I'm bringing in character introductions. And I know in print it's going to, you know, really make the page very full. But in digital, I can see a process of it, you know, just being very organic, where, you know, the character is presented and then their bio, you know, is slided in through guided view or whatever, and then it's slided out and you're back to the comic. Whereas in the printed page, it becomes very, very full. Not a bad thing, but can, you know, does create more work for me.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else got something there, or can I keep going?
So you just, at the start of your answer to me, which was well thought, you said about when you're starting with the page, do you compose for what the page is going to look like in print or on a widescreen like on a horizontal tablet?
Yeah, with digital, the outline that I received from DC was the page is split horizontally down the middle for print, and splitting it, horizontally, creates a shape that is not dissimilar to your tablet size. So you're basically working in tablet size pages that then kind of are assembled together for print.
Okay.
And which is really kind of fascinating. And, you know, if you look at all the Batman 66, you'll notice a line going straight down the middle of the pages. And, you know, other print first mediums, like lots of Monkey Brain comic books, are that way. Like, the page is split clear in half, which I didn't really notice until I started doing that for DC Comics. It creates sort of a two-tiered system where you're drawing, where you have to think about the aesthetic of the tablet page, but also the overall aesthetic of the print page, which adds like an extra layer of thinking.
So difficult for you.
Yeah, oh, so difficult. Well, I look like Balky, so I mean, the English language is hard enough for me.
MSG has joined us.
Yeah, man, there he is.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, take your shirt off.
Welcome to the podcast.
This is not the hangout. So, won't be happening.
I revealed earlier the hangout is actually us dressed in drag.
No.
Too Wong Fu. You guys should do a Too Wong Fu podcast.
Well, that I would stand for.
Matt Centauri Griffith. Matt Centauri Griffith. Scott Kowalczuk.
Well, hello, sir. Hey.
How's it going? Really nice to meet you.
You too. I do wish you'd pop that shirt off, though.
He means it, too. That's the problem.
Yeah. Maybe after a few drinks.
Well, you'd be drinking for Scott then, because he can't drink right now. So, you know, we all have to have a drink so that Scott can just, you know, get the buzz on.
Well, to give Matt a sense of where we're at in the podcast, Balky was from Meepos.
Meepos, yes.
Ah, you were so close.
I was really close.
Yeah.
Good on me.
And just so Matt knows, the reason I'm not drinking right now is I'm in AA.
Oh, congrats.
Yeah, so right it's now. I'm 42 hours sober. So thanks my sponsor. Mo's my sponsor.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, that's going to be a problem.
No, it'd be a way bigger problem if Chris was your sponsor.
I should have said Chris was my sponsor.
Yeah, you really should have.
Man, it's really,
he's never been on a podcast and not had a beer in hand, except for the one time he recorded from his car. Did you ever hear that story, either one of you two?
No.
I feel like I've heard podcasts that sound like they're recorded from your car.
This literally was. Chris was at work. He used to go to his work. He didn't have good Wi-Fi in his house, and he used to use his tablet. He still sometimes does to do the podcasting, sign in on Skype or whatever. And he would go to his work where they had Wi-Fi. For some reason, the work at Wi-Fi was cutting in and out. So he was trying different rooms to try and find it, and he kept on cutting in and out of the podcast. It happened too many times for us to edit it out. And eventually, he ended up in his car. It was minus like 25 degrees here, which I don't even know what that would be in American,
closing out minus 25. You know, 15 probably.
Yeah. It's like
we even out at minus 40, cool. We even out at minus 47. So.
Yeah, exactly. It's like really freaking cold. And he was outside in his car, and then he turned his car on for the heat, and it was making so much noise. His car was so old that we couldn't hear him, and we had to have him turn it off. So he stayed in his car where he could get a Wi-Fi signal in the freezing cold for an hour and a half to talk comics. It was hilarious, and only Chris would do that. On the other hand, you can't deny his dedication.
No.
Except today.
That guy never needs to be justified.
He's committed, for sure.
He should be committed after that.
See, I set you up. And you came through. That was perfect.
He suffers like for his art. That's what he does.
I like the idea of Chris sitting in his car, like just shivering cold, like underneath a blanket with a beer podcast. With a beer.
Yeah, I don't know if he had a beer, but you could hear his like teeth chattering and stuff at that point. And it was awful audio. It was like the worst show ever. But at that point, we're like, well, we got to publish this.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
What was that, episode 5?
Yeah. Something like that. Like early. We were in the interview portion about Batman 66 talking to Scott here.
Let's call it Bat Talk. I think that's more than okay. Talk. Yeah.
Bat Talk with Scott.
Yeah.
Show title.
Bat Scott.
You good? You see the latest show title there, Matt?
No, I have not.
No. It's been a whirlwind, now so. With more MSG.
Oh, perfect. Perfect.
Like that?
Yeah, I do actually.
Yeah, that's good.
MSG is not good for you. No. I think we should clarify that it's.
I want to be. Actually, I've done some research, and it's actually not bad for you.
I like the two extremes are
the guy who researched MSG to find out if it was or was not bad for you, and the guy that had pneumonia and has already told us what his naturopath thought about it. Those are really the. If we only had a guy that found all of his information out from WebMD, we would have all of our bases covered.
Oh, you're done then. I'm there.
Pope's got it covered.
Got it covered.
Yeah, I actually have MSG in my cupboard now. Because
That's not ironic at all.
No.
Because everything tastes so
What's
much better
What's weird is
he
autographed the container, which is...
Yeah, right? But you know what's funny is that there was... What is it that's MSG that I never realized was MSG? It's like it's a brand name of something that my mom had in her house for like 10 years or something. I'll figure it out.
Probably all of our moms had it, though.
Keep talking. It's, oh, Accent.
Oh?
Accent.
That's American.
Oh, they, that you should put into flavor.
I remember that.
Spike.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
That's just, all that is MSG.
I can actually see the packaging in my head. Yeah. Like red and like green accents on the letters, so I think.
Yeah.
Brett, I'm worried you're actually having a stroke. I can actually see it in your head.
Yeah. And I see
is that toast colors, I smell.
And I also smell the colors. Is that? Is,
yeah.
I taste MSG. Like, oh, that's the onset of Parkinson's.
Well, usual listeners may not know this, but I'm not just a comics writer or comics news writer or whatever I am. I'm also a foodie writer, so these are the things I figure out in my day job.
And a spokesperson for MSG, apparently.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't say that.
So put it on everything. It's so good.
I've only used it once.
Not Chinese
I
food.
Snort this shit. Yeah.
There is one of my giganticest pet peeves is I will look stuff up like, hey, is MSG really bad for you? Like, what do we actually know about MSG? And I will look it up. And then when I say something, people will say, well, of course you look that up. Like, it's a bad thing that I was curious.
Yeah. That,
you would look that up. What do you mean?
Why don't you just trust when people tell you things, Keith?
They know everything.
Keith, smell my finger. It'll be fine. Just trust me. Quit looking it up on the damn internet.
Does this yogurt smell
Scott
bad to you?
Walchuk's finger.
Man of Steel was bad, Keith. I don't know why you can't just get that in your head.
I still haven't seen it.
Oh, you won't like it.
No, you'll probably love it just because, I mean, you liked Wonder Woman with Adrian Palicki.
Oh, I love it. It was so good.
Just
she, like,
no words, man.
She looked exactly like how I pictured Diana, like in my mind's eye. Like, she just became that character.
Anyways, so Batman 66, we were talking.
I'm okay talking about Adrian Pilecki a bit more.
Scott, it is a really good thing that I don't owe you a dollar for every time that I have referred to the Scott Kowalczyk method of watching Catwoman.
Oh, that's right.
We were trying to remember this, actually. We couldn't remember the exact details. What is your theory on Catwoman again?
With the theory?
I probably repeat it more often than
Scott is the one, yeah.
Yeah, what was it again? It was I think the expectation was everyone was going in with the notion, oh, it's Selina Kyle Catwoman. But if you go in not with that expectation that it's, you know, that it's our, you know, our comic book Selina Kyle, that it just happens to be a character with the name Catwoman, it's a pretty good movie. Like, yeah, I put the action scenes in CG on par with the first Sam Raimi Spider-Man. Like, really, the actual physical execution wasn't that much different. Like, it was fun. It was lighthearted, like the Sam Raimi Spider-Man. It was Halle Berry crawling around on all fours, as if I'm going to say, yeah, that's not something I want to watch.
One of those rare.
What about the Sharon Stone performance? It was pretty awful.
Well, I kind of thought she was cool. Like, okay, spoilers. She kind of turns into a Clayface-like character where she becomes impermeable and super strong. Like, that was an okay turn. Like, the writing of the character I thought was on par with how Matt Hagen was written in the Feet of Clay two-parter from Batman the Animated Series where, you know, they dumped, what was it? Was it Rupert? No, it was Roland Daggett. They dumped... Renew You facial cream all over him and he turned into Clayface. She was doing the same thing, but she just became like hard as a rock. Facebook.
So now we'll open up the floor to a rebuttal. Anybody on counter on Bat Catwoman? Anybody got it?
I still haven't even seen the damn movie, and now Scott's ruined it for me. So I mean, it's
that's
like
true. That's true.
I did say spoilers.
Of course, doesn't do it for me. So
wow. Okay. Well, that's. I have to ask the question: Are you gay? I'm kidding.
Yeah.
I don't know how to broach that. Like.
I was about to say that Benjamin Bratt looks great in it, Matt. Give Bratt another chance.
He's a beautiful man.
Eh. Yeah, he's okay.
Why is it Benjamin Bratt? He's a beautiful man.
For Matt,
I mean, he's yes. I mean, if the movie starred Tom Hardy, we would be talking a whole other story.
Or if it starred Javier Bardem, who I've got a major man crush on.
No.
No, I do actually have a man.
Go for a different type of guy.
Yes, we clearly have different tastes.
I like a Latin man. I am very heterosexual, but I do think Latin men are very attractive.
Scott, I'm not Latin, and what about me?
Oh, Mo, I'd cuddle you all night long.
There we go.
You're not Latin, but you're lit.
And once again, we differ.
I totally have a hookup with cuddle parties if you ever, you know, need to get into that scene.
When you, okay. You gotta get
I do remember where you live, Brett.
You gotta get through these cold Canadian winters.
Trying to bring it back here.
This got serious fast. We're talking about sexuality and, you know, different attractions to men. I can't let DC know that I recorded this.
You better not. Yeah. Back to this. When you get a script for a digital book like this, does it look different than a script if you're getting it for a print book, or is it kind of the layout the same that you receive it?
No, it's just it's been a long time since I've actually looked at the script. I think it's kind of naturally broken up into two-tiered pages if you're thinking about print, because the print page is digitally two pages. So that's the only thing that I can kind of remember from the script being any different from a regular script. Otherwise, it was just a script. It was just a lovely, beautiful script with King Tut in it, whom I also have a man crush on.
I know.
I do love, Scott, that the stars are aligning and your issue will be the next issue on the shelves after the DVDs come out.
I know, I got that too. I can't believe that.
It's exciting.
Yeah, it's the same month that the DVD is released, and I think it's like a week. That's not to say that, like, I didn't try to account for it in print, but the digital experience for this, especially with a few of the reveals, like the reveal of King Tut from his alter ego, is just, it won't be the same in print as it is digital. The digital is just going to be... The digital, I think, is going to be really fun on this issue.
Matt, that's your chance. You have any questions for Scott?
Well, of course, I don't know.
It's a little tough because you don't know what we've already asked, but...
Yeah.
That's okay. Go for it. Let's talk about Halle Berry some more.
But no, let me ask you about King Tut, because this is an interesting thing. I reviewed the second volume, the hardcover of Batman 66 recently. Cool. And so that was filled with all these characters that I really hated as a kid. Like, they were all the ones that weren't in the comic book, like King Tut.
Yeah.
But I found them so endearing.
Mm.
So, like, how did you come after, like, that character? Like, did you love him to begin with? Did you love him through the script, or what?
Yeah, King Tut, I mentioned this to Mo earlier, was just he embodied everything that I loved about the show, which was, you know, he was big, he was over the top, he was lighthearted, he was, you know, he was colorful, like, he had such a variation in tone from the beginning of a scene to an end of a scene. Like, at the beginning of the scene, he'd be, you know, kind of very meek and, you know, keeping his distance from the camera, and then by the end he's, you know, yelling and he's just over the top. Like, aside from Gorshin and Burgess Meredith, on occasion, Victor Buono was the only one that just exploded out of nowhere. But it's also, I think, the funniest character. Like, there were instances in the TV show where he's crying because he's upset that, like, a plan didn't come together. And it's just like, you can't have the Joker now and, like, the Batman universe or, like, the Heath Ledger Joker, like, crying, like, you know, upset that, you know, something went wrong. But, like, the King Tut villain, yeah, man, that dude can cry. He can have a full range of emotions. And that was what I loved about the TV show. And that character specifically, he was human. Like, he was a human character who had, you know, had feeling.
How do you kind of express this on the page? A character who's that, I don't know, out there. Like, how do you capture that? Kind of his personality.
Have you guys seen Victor Buono in anything other than Batman?
Not that so. I would know of.
Yeah. I think I have.
Before. I've seen. He was sort of a staple on 60s TV. He appeared.
He must have done a Twilight Zone.
I actually don't know about Twilight Zone. I know he was on Wild Wild West. I think he appeared in an episode of I Spy. But Buono always stood out for me as a kid, and, you know, sort of in my 20s when I was studying the aesthetic of the show, because his emotions would swing so wildly, and he would, he animated himself. Like, he was really an animated character, you know, from, you know, wild, crazy eyes to yelling to, you know, big over the top gestures, which weren't really acting. Like, at times it was like it was watching a stand-up comedian just really go for it. So I tried to do as much of that with him as possible. Like, when he's in his professor state, you know, I try to keep him as meek as possible. But when he transitions to Tut, everything's over the top. Like, I've never drawn a character's tongue so much while he's talking. Because, like, for King Tut, like, dude, that tongue is, like, doing, like, half the acting. Which actually should be the name of my autobiography.
He's in a lot of Frank Sinatra movies, which, of course, means that I've seen him a lot. And Beneath the Planet of the Apes.
Oh, I didn't know about that.
Who is he in Planet of the Apes?
Not 100% sure at this moment, but...
he's credited as Batman.
Excellent.
While they're looking that up, do you kind of study when you're looking at this? I mean, obviously, you had to prove them that you could do the likeness of the different characters, and obviously, your Adam West looks great and everything like that. Well, and we know that
so much.
Yeah, no, it's great. Like, one of the things that gets me is you managed to capture him, and it looks like Adam West. You know, that's Adam West just by the face. Whether he has the Batman mask on or not. So there's something about capturing that. The jawline and the facial expression with that Batman mask on that you managed to get. And that's got to be a lot more difficult, I would imagine, than making sure that it still looks like Adam West than if it's just, you know, his face is the Bruce Wayne character. But, I mean, that said, you've probably drawn it a billion times even before getting this because you love it, right?
Yeah, like any chance when I was in college that I had to include a character that looked like Adam in any project, I'd just do that. I was reading his autobiography. I don't know. I think I was in third year college, and there was I think there was always a misconception about him from comic bookdom that, you know, his Batman for some reason wasn't as, you know, fit as everybody else. But, like, of all the actors to play Batman, like, that dude was the most fit. Like, there are pictures in his autobiography of him surfing. And, like, the dude's cut. Like, he's in, like, great 1960s. Really? Yeah, he's in great 1960s shape. The perception, like, the aesthetic that everybody forgets is that he's got a gigantic yellow belt that goes around his midsection. Okay, is that from Planet of the Apes?
That is. He's one of the telepaths in the city under.
Oh,
in the,
okay.
He's not very nice to credit him as Batman, but he's the heavy set telepath who tortures our hero in Beneath the Planet.
Which, by the way, is the role I'm up for next time.
Nice.
That's amazing.
Nice. Heavy set man. They'll call it now though.
And Keith, he's in the silencers as Tung Z.
In Dawn of Beneath the Planet of the Apes. You'll be up for that role.
Yeah. It was you were saying, Scott, before talking about the shape of
Bruce. Oh, yeah. Everybody thought, I remember that there was a misconception back in like the 80s and 90s surrounding Adam that, like, oh, his Batman wasn't as fit as everybody else, but he was literally the most fit actor. But he had a giant, like a huge yellow belt right around his tummy.
Well, and, you know, it's really interesting that, you know, one of the things that's changed so significantly, and I think the 60s still had this aesthetic, is that what we consider like a man's fit body shape,
yeah,
so warped now compared to what it used to be. Totally. It used to be much more like rectangular, and now it's very triangular. And so I'm not sure that any of the guys in the suits in the most recent films were all that different than what Adam West looked like. But oh, there's,
I guess I forgot about Christian.
Well, yeah. There is human growth hormone runs rampant in Hollywood.
Well, I mean, you look at what Sean Connery looked like in the Bonds, and he was, yeah, he trained and trained and trained to do that role, to look like the perfect specimen. And I mean, today, you know, there's no 8-pack on him or anything like that.
No.
I was having this conversation with somebody, I can't remember who it was recently, about the standard of beauty for men being so rigidly defined in the depths of consumerist 1980s, and it's just something that's perpetuated on. Like I've mentioned a couple times on the podcast already, I've started watching wrestling again, and like I'm forgetting. Like, I had forgotten that from, you know, sort of my youth, seeing these guys whose entire job it is, you know, to keep their bodies, like, at peak condition. And then looking at myself going, like, I don't look good enough. And it's just, like, that's really shitty that becomes the standard of beauty for men, you know, which is something that's entirely unattainable. And, like, this is something that I know, you know, women have dealt with, you know, vastly longer, but... you know, for me, it was fascinating to see that switch kind of flick back on in my head after watching wrestling for a few weeks, going, oh, I got to work out more. I'm all flat.
Imagine how Mo feels then. Yeah.
Anyone can attain that. They just need a time machine and access to gene alteration.
I'm just going to say this. I mean, I know Matt won't cuddle with me, but I think I'm a damn good looking guy no matter what. Now,
I never thought you weren't good looking.
Oh, well, there you go.
I'm happily married, though, Mom.
That's so. True. That's true. And a bit of a tease. But
I don't think I've ever been called that. oddly complimentary, right. I think.
I could be your third husband, because, of course, Keith is your second husband.
I prefer to think of it as a bromance.
Yeah, bromance. It's more like brotherly love with me and Keith.
But what the hell was I about to say? All right, when you're
lining up to be my third husband.
No. Back to the comic. Back to Batman 66. Because I find this fascinating. We're picking your mind here, Scott. Picking your mind.
Do it.
Here, we're talking about. Did you go back and actually watch the episodes of King Tut, or are they kind of emblazoned in your mind already?
No,
and
I kind of figure that I've watched that TV show probably 5 times over. Like I've probably watched, you know, each episode five full runs through. The one thing that I decided not to do was look at any pictures of Victor Buono as King Tut. Or watch the episodes with him, because I didn't want to just try to recreate pictures of him that I found on the internet that I used for, you know, reference. Like if I found a picture of Victor Buono, it was that I needed to make my version of his likeness.
That's something
that's kind of what I
really like in the Batman 66 is that it doesn't look like photo reference stuff. And like there was a book, the Jericho comic, which I really enjoyed the story. but the art was literally like they would draw the figure and then the head would be kind of misset on the body because they were just tracing over a photo of the head.
There's a few stories that I've heard from different artists working on different intellectual properties, you know, that have been taken from studios with actors' likenesses. And some actors are actually really firm on, you know, getting sets of the artwork to then verify that the artist did do a nice enough likeness of them, and then will then sign off. Some actors won't. Some actors will say, yeah, you got to redraw this. So in some instances, you know, if you are working with a property that has, you know, that has a necessity for keeping the aesthetic very, very true to the source material, then that's probably the instances where you're seeing those really awkward, heads where an artist probably said, okay, I cannot draw this actor or this actress exactly the way that they look, so I just have to trace it. Luckily,
you know, there's entire blogs out there kind of exposing people for tracing and for stealing artworks and everything like that all over the internet.
Right.
But this is different, right? Because, I mean, you're not really stealing it. You're just doing what they ask.
Yeah, sometimes there's, you know, I've heard certain stories where there's a real disconnect between what the intellectual property demands and what is actually physically achievable by the artistic team. Because, like, there's, in my issue of Batman 66, there's two panels, where I really wish I could have gone back and redrawn Adam and Batman's face, because they're just small inset panels of, you know, Batman in the background, but I didn't feel like I achieved the likeness the way that I wanted to. But there isn't that, you know, really strict code that it needs to look exactly like Adam, because if you know, like that's really hard to achieve all the time, yeah. Especially with, you know, a face that's more than half covered.
So you're sitting there, you kind of want to get this character, and you're trying to capture the personality of the King Tut character.
Yeah.
Then. So you're not really trying to capture, like, you don't sit there and go, his body shape is exactly this, or his I don't know, structure when he's, what's the word I'm looking for, stance. You know, you're not trying to copy his exact stance or anything like that. It's more about the personality than the actual movement. Is that
right? Well, you know, I try to capture them as closely as possible, like Adam's Batman as well. Like I didn't want to make him look like he was chunky around the middle or anything, because he wasn't. Like, you know, so I made him look like probably a slightly more fit version of what I remember Adam looking like on his surfboard in his autobiography. Victor Buono was a big man. Like, he was a big 350-pound man. And so, I mean, that shape is sort of... I love drawing overweight characters because there's just such a beautiful organic shape to their body.
I wish there was more of them in comics. Honestly, I really do.
Really?
Yeah, I wish there's more variety of shapes and body types and sizes and everything. Well, and the backgrounds, even ethnicities, everything, sizes, heights, everything. I wish there was more.
It makes a difference. It is really hard to achieve. Like Tut's a really challenging character because he has, you know, he's a heavy set character, but he has so many different elements. Like a character like Gorshin's Riddler is in a green leotard with a question mark.
Is that Gorshin's Riddler picture in the back, by the way, on the wall there behind you?
Yes, friend painted it for me for Christmas one year.
All right. Anyways, you were saying.
Yeah. So he had a lot of different elements that were, like, his costuming is really challenging. But, like, the overall Victor Buono aesthetic I really tried to keep, but it's that comic book version of him. So I always thought Victor Buono was at his best when he was really outlandish, because he was a big man and he was a big actor. So my King Tut, I kind of tried to infuse as much of that as possible. So his gestures aren't generally not small; they're either big or they're really meek, because that's how I picture Victor Buono playing that character.
Anybody else? You got some? Who's got something for Scott?
Are you going to pick up your issue and then find Adam West and get him to sign it physically?
No, maybe. No.
Oh, come on.
I think you wait in line in the autograph line, and when you get there, sign it yourself. Like, this is for you.
That's a good one.
And that's hilarious.
And then just I drew take this off.
For you? You've been doing this all day. This is for you.
Yeah, and then just
ask him for $40.
I talked to that's really funny.
That'd be awesome.
I talked to one of my two co-writers on Downset Fight, Chris Sims, interviewed Adam West, I think he said 5 years ago, and all they did was talk about Victor Buono, and how much Adam like just absolutely adored every time he appeared on the show and how much he adored that character. Like there really was something to that Tut character and the way that he brought that show to life. Like, yes, he wasn't the Joker.
I'm interested
yes.
that Matt said he hated that character and all the characters that weren't Batman comics characters.
I did at the time, yeah.
Like, I really do get as a comic book reader and like, you know, sort of in one's youth looking at that show going, you know, I don't understand, you know, Zelda the Great. Why is she on here? I don't want to watch her. I want to watch the Joker instead. But some of those characters just were, for me, like just had the spirit of that show in them. Like, you know, even Zelda the Great, you know, walking around in her, you know, her beautiful orange dress. Like, she's a big, bright character who, yes, does not fit into, you know, I guess we'd probably all be about the same era of 70s, 80s comic books. She doesn't fit into 70s or 80s comic books, but boy, did she fit in on that show.
Yeah, she wouldn't fit in now, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I came up with comics in the 80s when, you know, they were getting serious, they were getting dark, they were getting more mature, and I really liked that. And it was an era of...
It's because you hate kids.
It is because I hate kids. And as a child, I hated all those around me.
you must have had a lot of self-loathing back then.
I was okay with me, but I spent a lot of time.
Grow, goddamn you!
but I had a lot of animosity toward the Batman 66 show, because at that time there were no 10 Marvel movies in 5 years, and 10 DC movies in 5 years. There was jack for superheroes in pop culture outside of comic books, and I was constantly frustrated that people's impression of what comics were was this campy 20-year-old TV show. And that quite frustrated me.
We were ostracized as kids, you know, like the, you know, nerd culture was not acceptable, back in the 80s. Like, I was into the Batman 89 heavily, and the Batman TV show when I was 8 or 9 years old, because that's when it came out. And then by the time Batman Returns rolled around, I think I was 11 or 12. So if I start talking about it or anything, it was just like, come on. Like, you know, the actual judgment from peers was that, like, that's kid stuff. Like, you know, that's just bright and colorful and just, you know.
I would have thought looking like bulky would make you very popular. I thought that would have been.
No, I was.
Your really beard probably hadn't come in at 13, though.
Yeah. I was.
That's sad.
I was overweight and out of shape at 13. The girls didn't like me the way that they do now, because of their love of bulky.
That is something that I saw on Twitter on yesterday when all of the Marvel movies were announced. Twitter got quite ugly for a while.
Really?
It was like the joy, and then there was the I love Marvel and DC's awful, I love DC and Marvel's awful, and it just like got really ugly.
Oh, for hours.
And to the and it was like I'm hypersensitive to that stuff, so I had like, you know, I'll just put it aside. And then there was an op-ed on Forbes about how destructive that infighting is, and one of the best observations I saw was, you know, when we were kids, it took bullies to treat us like this. Now we treat each other like this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and how spoiled are we that we can even like decide between those two things? I mean, it's, and I mean, like you were saying, like when we were kids, you had Batman 66 and you had Wonder Woman 77, and that was pretty much it. Yeah. And there was Spider-Man and his amazing friends.
Yeah.
So if, you know, I mean, you couldn't afford not to like one of those things. That was all you had.
we watched, so now it's watched John Wesley Shipp as Flash, and damn it, we liked it.
Right.
We really did.
And now we just watch him as Flash's dad.
Yeah. No, it's a weird environment, you know, sort of steeped deeply in nerd culture, where, you know, I've noticed instances where, you know, I'll be on podcasts or I'll be on, you know,
this podcast you mean.
Yeah, this one.
Just
but
this is what you do.
You know, instances where I sit and I talk about, you know, the culture behind comic books and, you know, behind the movies that are based on the comic books, and anytime I say something like, I like the Halle Berry Catwoman, or I like the Val Kilmer Batman, the ensuing response is always judgment. It's always, seriously, what's wrong with you? Why would you like that? As opposed to, you know, that sort of more open-minded going, well, okay, what do you like about it? I'd actually like to hear more because my opinion is different. We've really weaved this fabric of aggressive judgment into the culture of, you know, geekdom, which I think is...
This isn't, Scott, I mean, the thing is, this isn't new. I mean, Brent and I were talking about this morning, that we were talking, I think it was this morning, was it yesterday morning? Either way, we're talking about, I don't get DC versus Marvel. Why can't you just enjoy both? And if you have to enjoy one more than the other, that's fine, but I know I need to switch back and forth. I don't get Android versus Apple. I just don't understand it. Who cares? I don't get Sega versus Super Nintendo back in the days, you know, Sega and Nintendo. Like, I never understood this. Like, who cares? Enjoy what you enjoy. Let others enjoy what they enjoy. I've never understood any of this.
I think there's it actually becomes a much larger picture of just, you know, people's individual self. You know, like coming from, you know, the materialistic consumerist culture of, you know, the 80s leading into the 90s, we've always defined ourselves by external stimuli. So, you know, for geekdom, we define ourselves by the things that we like, the things that we own. You know, that, you know, my love of that movie or that character, you know, that becomes me. So, like, that is what my actual definition of self is based upon. That's not really the case. This is just stuff that we're consuming and being entertained by, but we've never actually, like, as sort of a larger society, stopped and gone, okay, what does actually define me? Like, if I'm
this
not
is, this is a topic that after 2 hours in this, that unfortunately I would love to get into, but it's gonna have to, we're probably gonna have to, this is something that I think we all could come back and really, really give a good discussion on, because it is a great topic, but it would take a while.
I think Scott was 30 seconds away from explaining to me why I get so upset when people rant and rave about Man of Steel. I thought he was actually just gonna solve my existential conundrum I've had for like a year.
Well, it's not a good movie, right, Matt?
So much, because I don't understand why it upsets me so much.
Yeah, why does it upset you? I don't get that. Now we all know you're a little ridiculous at Booster Gold, but we don't care.
I want to find out.
We all know you're wrong, so therefore it's okay, right?
Nice to see that this podcast is free from that kind of judgment Scott was talking about.
Absolutely. We have no judgment, like that Wonder Woman awful TV series.
Yeah, that's the thing. It is a really complicated topic, but it, you know, does, I won't get into it, but it does involve a lot
of stuff. Well, we want to get into it, but it's going to take on another 2 hours if we do that.
You should actually have me and Riley and I on to talk about that, because that's something he and I talk about quite a bit.
That's a beers episode right there.
All right.
That's a good one.
Let us frame it as an intervention with Keith, who's gets too upset too often. And
you really do get upset over that Man of Steel, and I never understood it. In fact, at one point in time, I just asked you if you had seen what somebody had written about it, and you went off. And I was like, whoa, I was just mentioning this opinion. He has a point.
I think it was probably the Mark Wade.
If it was the Mark Wade, then you were getting, like, you would be the 87th person who had asked me. So, yeah, I have that kind of reaction. Yeah, as I said, when people complain that Starbucks' large size is called a venti, I'll get that reaction. there's only so many times I can get asked the same thing before. Yeah, you are going to get a negative reaction, and it doesn't matter if you're asking for the first time. If you're the 87th person.
It's hard. It's hardwired into us too. To you know, it has been hardwired in, and you know, sort of short order to be very judgmental of other people's opinions too, as opposed to, you know, like Matt's and my introduction talking about Catwoman, like that got pretty heated pretty fast, and it was just like, dude, all it is like two guys with a different opinion, but there's nothing wrong with that. But like even in that interaction, like I think I became judgmental. I was just like, fuck, that's the exact opposite of what I'm trying to be within this community.
Well, sorry, for Matt. The record, I actually find your love of the Catwoman movie, or your like, I don't want to overstate it, to be really interesting.
I appreciate
it. And it makes me want to go back and watch it again.
It's really, yeah, it's... It's like with anything, it's like with my appreciation of the Marvel movies. I appreciate them. I don't like them. But I'm also not the target audience for them. So that's something where I can go, like, I just watched Captain America Winter Soldier, and I appreciated it. And there were elements that I really enjoyed, but I didn't really like it. Like, I walked away going, oh, okay, it was exactly what I expected it to be.
I'm always more intrigued by someone who has the dissenting opinion of liking something, because that's always more engaging. A friend of mine who I worked with in theater said, it's hating things is easy. Liking something and standing by that is hard. And when you're the dissenting opinion and you can stand up, because I talk to people who Superman Returns is their favorite Superman movie. And I just had the conversation a couple of days ago with a friend of mine, and she was telling me why that was her favorite Superman. And that was much more interesting to me than why you hate something.
I still like Superman Returns, no matter what.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, what do you know?
Yeah, me too. No, but I mean, even when we were together with Chris Duker, and he mentioned something about Avengers and asked me if I'd finally seen it, and I said, yeah, it was all right. He got upset for a second. I'm like, well, if you want to talk about why I only thought it was all right, he's like, no, I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to hear about it.
And that's like a spot on Chris Duker impression.
That is pretty much. Hold on. I'm sitting back and I'm doing nothing. That's my spot on Chris Duker impression.
Oh, Brad. Oh.
Well, you know he's not going to listen to this, right? Because he's got no time.
No.
That's so mean. Oh, that's so judgmental.
Answer in 10 seconds. Right back to you. Matt, Matt has not said enough. I think we give Matt a chance for one more thing, one more topic or conversation or something for Scott or anybody, and then I think we wrap one sucker up.
Well, all I want to say is that in the top, I don't know if you guys talked about any of this yet, but on the topic of things ending, I'm very sad that today was the last issue of Brian Azzarello and Cliff Chang's Wonder Woman. That's just I'm going to miss that series a lot. I think a lot of people are. And not that, you know, what's coming up isn't going to be, you know, okay or whatever. But it's going to be very... a very different experience.
I only found out, I mean, I gave it a couple tries, and one time, I mean, I read the zero and the number one, right? The different times. I thought the zero was pretty good, and I didn't really like the number one. And I haven't read anymore. It was only today I found out that he was still doing it. And I was actually quite surprised that I mean, because that's a good long run. That means that this entire character, as it's being defined largely within this new DCU, is done by him and one guy after this length of time, and that's fairly impressive. So it is going to be a different experience, I imagine.
Yeah, there are only, off the top of my head anyway, there are only two other books that have the same creative team the entire time that are still running, and that would be Batman and Batman and Robin. So yeah, it's a... it's a big deal.
But I don't think anybody else actually reads it. Keith would be the only one with a chance.
I was, Matt keeps telling me to read it, and then once they announced that they were that team was leaving, I thought I will wait till it's done, and then I can read it as a whole.
And Brett, you gave it a good shot, didn't you? Like,
I read the first. I liked the first issue. I read the first few. I at that point I was having problems staying on like regular series altogether. It was just like my reading, you know, schedule was so spotty that I just couldn't go. Now at least I'm maintaining a regular schedule. I'm actually reading regular comics.
Because you and I were back reading a bunch of books for a podcast series that we plan to do that we have not yet been able to pull together, but we still hope to. Is that why?
That was part of it. I'm sure, you know, it was very hard when you're reading, I don't know, 1,000-odd comic books that,
All right.
I love Cliff's artwork. I didn't read the book, but Cliff's artwork just keeps getting better and better, man.
It's gorgeous.
I mentioned it before, but I did a huge comic book purge over the last couple of years, and Cliff's work is one of the artists whose like issues I really made sure to hold on to, because there's just he has such a command over making everything beautiful. Like when he took over Green Arrow from, I think it was Scott McDaniel, I think he only did 4 or 5 issues, but man, were they 4 or 5 beautiful, beautiful issues.
Yeah. Did you ever get, his Modern Masters book?
No, I didn't even know there was one.
Tomorrow's just put it out maybe about 4 or 5 months ago.
Oh,
get it.
Man, I can imagine.
Gorgeous.
Yeah. No, that dude has it.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Matt, anything you want to plug? I mean, we're at We Talk Podcast on Twitter for us, and comics at wetalkpodcast.com to email us. And we're OUT on our end, and we're going to talk to Scott. I have one more question before we go out, but I'll let you do your plug. And sorry, Keith, I know you're the host, but...
I'm still broken up that the last issue of Thunderbolts came out today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I thought that I need to catch up on right there.
It's three different, very different.
Chris teams is also really upset.
Really, just a fun book, and it does come to a good conclusion. The creative team that came on after Charles Soule just did one story basically. Their whole run is one storyline, and I will miss it. I'm not we were talking about when we came of age in comics, and I'm not a big reader of what most people would call fun comics, of light distraction comics, and Thunderbolts was a rare book that I got into that is that. It is just a silly book, a team made up entirely of loners, great teams on it, and I will miss that book. Stupid Marvel. I'm going to go to change.org to start a petition. For Marvel to uncancel Thunderbolts.
There'll be a new Thunderbolts number one pretty soon.
Just because no one was buying it, they canceled the studio. I don't get it. It's unfair.
Right. Right. And the way that you talk about Thunderbolts is how I talk about Harley Quinn, which is, again, never a character I cared about until this run, and I just think it's fantastic.
What about the Harley Quinn marijuana cover coming out for
today, isn't it?
For Comicosity. Nice. My review of that issue is on the site. Can be found now. That's comicosity.com, your place for comic news, reviews, interviews, including a recent one with Jeff Lemire on his original Canadian First Nations character, Equinox, and an interview with Tony Daniel today on Deathstroke and lots of other fun stuff. So check us out, and you can find me on Twitter at Photocub, FOTOCUB.
Yeah, likely an upcoming interview with some gentleman I know named Scott Kowalczyk, I imagine. know, hook it up. I'll see. I'll get you guys in touch.
Jeff Lemire and I did a story together for Jay Torres's Kickstarter, True Patriot 2.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. Cool. Jeff's awesome. I want to twist his arm into actually working on a book with me, because his script that he sent me was so good. It was a script written by an artist. So everything was just like, oh, the Jeff, thank you. That's so easy to draw and so much fun to draw.
Excellent. Here. Now, well, that's what I kind of want to ask you, Scott. I mean, obviously, we know that the Batman 66 has issue 17, and I don't know what it is going to be digitally.
Chapter 47 and 48, I think.
47, 48, and issue 17. So look out for it. But is this kind of, obviously I don't expect you to announce anything, but you've worked for one of the big two, your name is out there, some major creators have seen you and editors, and just kind of your visibility is probably up, even though I know it hasn't officially come out yet. So is your finest leading to anything, or can we see maybe some more stuff coming of a major, I know you mentioned a book for Oni that was a parody of G.I. Joe, which
it's kick so ass. Good. Dude, it's so good. That book, if I can ever like actually get on a roll and draw that damn thing like nonstop, it's so good.
Well, yeah. If you don't have pneumonia for 6 weeks, that'll probably help.
Fuck, pneumonia's the worst. I just want a glass of wine. I just want to sit and enjoy a glass of wine and play my new copy of WWE 2K15.
Oh, I gotta get that.
I just got it today. It's just I'm just itching.
But do that after you spend a couple hours drawing.
Yes.
Okay?
Yeah. No. You're right.
Because otherwise, you're not drawing anything.
No.
Is this opening up? Do you think you're going to see some more work? Really, any more Batman? Do you think in the future for you? Or
yeah. The Batman 66 team is extremely happy with the work that I turned in. So, I don't know. Or can really say of what's next, but you know there have been a few things that I've been brewing, which I hope to I hope will come to some fruition next year.
There was one thing that you had thrown past me off air once that it was like a kick ass story idea.
I can't wait for you to tell me what that is, because I don't remember what I told you.
That's great. You probably literally don't either.
Yeah, we'll I really don't.
But again, Scott, the first time that I'm going to be fully honest with you here, okay? We went to the Red and White Club show. I think this was, again, was this 2002, 12, 11? Maybe 11?
Probably 11. Oh, that was...
I think it was 2011. That's the first time we met you. We showed up there, and we just started doing the podcast. We've gotten a few interviews at the Calgary Comic and Entertainment Expo. And we showed up and talk to you. There was a few different guys. I mean, they basically said to me, Keith and Brett said to me, let's show up. Let's see if there's anybody. And there was you and a guy named Riley Rossmo.
That guy.
And a guy named Kerry Nord. And,
Yeah, we didn't talk to Riley though. So yeah.
Well, this is what I'm going to get to. And, So we're sitting there and we're like, well, man, we got this new podcast. We only had about 5 or 6 episodes at this point. We didn't have any sort of thing with Comicosity happening yet. And we have one of the episodes, a guy recorded it from his freaking car and minus 75,000. Was not at the best shape. And we're sitting there and we interviewed Kerry. And we knew Kerry Nord. And I first saw Kerry Nord's work in the 90s in Daredevil.
Yeah.
And, knew the name. And of course, he had done the Conan. And he had mentioned he had something upcoming, which he couldn't mention yet, which ended up being Exo Manowar.
Oh, right.
And then we're like, well, we should probably interview one of these other guys. I remember walking by Riley and going, well, I don't understand his stuff. Like, so not him. I'm like, well, I guess we'll just talk to this other guy here. And I knew nothing about your work, but I tried to bullshit.
No, and, you totally sold it.
Came up and acted like I was a fan, and I had no idea who you were, Scott.
That's okay.
You were real, and you mentioned it yourself. You said you're really green at the business at the time. You're really new, and you only had Intrepid's out, and you're working on Downside Fight, but you couldn't really, do anything with it. It didn't come out forever. So, I really wish I had talked to Riley, but I'm glad I talked to you.
I love that Mo really framed that entire thing as a meet cute from a romantic comedy.
Yeah, that's true.
And then I saw him And then across the room, I saw this guy, and you know, it was interesting.
Well, and, no, but
totally looked like Balky.
There was Terry, there was Riley, there was Scott, and there was one other person. I can't remember who that was, who also didn't talk to. And I'm not sure if that person is stuck in the industry. But the point being, though, that anyways, I looked at your stuff. I thought, well, that's pretty good. I didn't know. Honestly, I never thought I'd see you again. I never thought you'd be anything in the industry. I never thought we'd hear from
that's
you
fair.
Again. Like, because,
we always
you know,
didn't
you had
believe
a,
in you, Scott.
You mentioned it was, you were good. We could see there was talent there.
Look
we
where we all are.
Talent, but, I mean, Riley kind of seemed to have more of a buzz around his table. But like I say, I mean, I think it was Green Wake at the time that was his workout. It might have been Proof.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I just looked at it and went, But then when I ended up reading Riley later on and started to understand it, and he's improved a lot himself.
Yeah,
like I'm a huge fan of him. He's an incredible talent. But yeah, so we saw you, talked to you that time. You turned out to be a great guy. We talked to you again at the Calgary convention. You didn't have anything new out a few months later. And then we seen you. We stayed in touch with you. We had you on the podcast. We had you at the summits. You know, we've become friends with you.
Yep.
And I mentioned at the you know the Super Summit, how you should draw Batman 66 before we even knew it. And here it is. And it's something that I know is so personal to you.
Yeah.
And I just want to say what a pleasure it's been to watch, for all of us to kind of watch your journey through all this, Scott. I mean, we feel like we have a rooting interest and a cheering for you. And okay. Not just because you're a local artist, but also because you're a hell of a good guy. So, you know, I just want to say how happy I am for you that you got a chance to do this, and I know we're going to see more great things from you in the future. I don't know if anybody else has anything like that they want to add, but I just had to mention it.
That's so unbelievably sweet, Mo. Honestly, that is so genuine. I've had an off kilter week spiritually, and that was just like that was as beautiful.
You remember that first time we were talking about? I was just trying to find something from an artistic point of view. And I was looking at your style, and we were talking about understanding comics, and we came and brought you Reinventing Comics, I think it was.
I still have them. I threw everything else out, but I still have them.
And bringing it to you. And you know, yeah, we had a good feeling about you. So, like I say, I'm always looking forward to seeing the next thing you're going to do.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Besties.
See, this is why I said I would totally cuddle with Mo, because as if I don't want to cuddle with that after hearing all that sweetness.
Of course, I was just doing it to make Matt jealous. Is the thing
I never said I wouldn't cuddle with Matt. I'd cuddle with Matt too.
This podcast has layers.
Matt and I can cuddle and watch Catwoman.
Anyway, Scott, the floor is yours to go out on. One last chance to plug.
Oh, okay. So I'm vaguely on Twitter at Scott Kowalczyk. ScottKowalczyk.com, ScottKowalczyk.tumblr.com. Batman 66, number 17, November 26th in print. And watch for chapter 47 and 48 on Comixology, probably first week of November or the second, and hopefully a huge book next Christmas.
Crocodile. He gave his life for tourism. Stoner.